Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Yesterday we spoke about the situation that we had here in the shul of a person who unfortunately is wheelchair bound and came into shul for a yahrzeit and wanted to know whether or not they're able to get an aliyah, whether or not they're able to daven for the yamid. So as we were discussing that, someone got me on the way out and said, maybe tomorrow you could just talk in general about a yahrzeit. What exactly is the story with yahrzeit in the first place? And what are we supposed to be thinking about and doing on a yahrzeit? So that's an important issue, and we'll just speak very briefly about it in the few minutes that we have. The Kadmonim write that on a yahrzeit, it seems to be clear that there is a Ilui HaNeshama. If the family members, if the direct descendants do any kind of mitzvah, go out of their way to do something special on the day of a yahrzeit, we assume that gives a special elevation. It uplifts the neshama in Shamayim. Like the Gemara says, Bra Mezaka Abba, a child or a grandchild has the ability to be mezaka the parent who is no longer alive. Once a person passes away, they are no longer able to elevate themselves. They are whatever they are. Whatever they accomplished in life is accomplished, and now they cannot elevate themselves anymore. However, through the children, they do have the ability. God looks down at the children and says, look what a job you did on your kids. Look how much they're following in my ways. And that will be a schus for the parents. So we assume that on the day of the yahrzeit, that's an opportunity for the family to be mezaka their father or their mother, whoever it might be that is their that there's their ancestor, and that's why we assume that on the yahrzeit we should go out of our way to daven for the yamid and to do all kinds of things that show an Ilui HaNeshama. So the first question that needs to be thought about when we talk about a yahrzeit is, how do we determine the proper day for a yahrzeit? Not always do we find that a person passes away and is buried on the same day. Very often you have a person passes away and then they'll wait a day or two for the relatives to come, or if there's some sort of difficult medical condition and they need to do an autopsy, a halachic autopsy, so then sometimes you can wait a few days. So what is the story? When are we supposed to observe? How do we determine when one is supposed to observe the yahrzeit? Does it go by the day of the patira, by the day of the death, or does it go by the day of the kvura, by the day of the burial? So this is an important question, and it's clear in Shulchan Aruch that the yahrzeit is generally determined by the yom haptira, that we go after the day of death, not after the day of burial. However, we know that Yud Beis Chodesh is what a child observes when a parent passes away. We assume that the Yud Beis Chodesh continue until the day of the burial. So therefore, that's why there were some who had the practice that in the first year after the person passes away, when you had a situation like that, where the death was on one day, and the Kvur was on a different day, the Shach and other very prominent Achronim assume that on the first year when you observe the yahrzeit, perhaps the yahrzeit should be observed on the day of the kvura, in order not to confuse the family, because the family has to refrain from going to weddings and listening to music until the day of the kvura. So if you're going to tell them that the yahrzeit is on the day of the ptira, then they're going to get convoluted, they're going to get confused, and therefore the Shach writes, there are some that have the practice that they split what the day of the kvura and the day of the, when to observe the yahrzeit on the first year. But certainly after the first year, we assume everyone agrees that it's supposed to be observed on the day of the Ptira, on the day of the death, and that's when the yahrzeit is supposed to be commemorated. Now, there are major questions that come up, let's say with regard to when you have a war in Eretz Yisrael. So very often, the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael are asked, unfortunately, that many soldiers are killed, and until the burial is allowed, until the bodies are given back, it's not always right away that that happens, unfortunately. So this is a major, unfortunately, a very major question. How long can we extend the difference between a Yom HaKvura and a Yom HaPtira? How long should we say that even in the first year, maybe we shouldn't extend it more than 3 days? Let's say you have somebody who passes away in a war in Israel, and they're taken captive, and they only get the body back 2 weeks later, and then 2 weeks later is when they're given for proper burial. So do we say that the yahrzeit should be kept on the first year, 2 weeks later? That's a very important question. I was asked 2 years ago by the families of the three boys to ask to discuss with my father what they should do, because that was a very complicated story. The children, it turns out that the evidence showed that they were killed within moments of when they were taken into the car. It was right away, a few hours later, that they were already buried into the ground. So the whole Jewish world was davening and pleading that they should come back alive, they should come back alive. It turns out they were killed right away when they were captured. So the question was, they were killed right away, and they were captured, and they were buried right away also. On that very day, they were buried by the Arabs. It wasn't until 3 weeks later that the Israelis retrieved the bodies and then gave them a proper Kever Yisroel. So that's a very tricky question, because even if you say that we should have a discrepancy in the first year between a Yom HaMisa and a Yom HaKvura, do you say that the burial that they had by the Arabs is not considered a burial? They were buried in Eretz Yisroel, but it was burial al yidei nachrim. It wasn't a kever Yisrael, it was a kever nachrim. So that's the question, how do we determine in a situation, unfortunately, like that, where they were buried right away in the ground properly, but it wasn't done by Jews, it was done by the Arabs, it was done by the enemy. How do you determine when the yard site should be observed in a case like that? But generally we assume in most regular cases that the yard site is observed on the Yom HaPtira, on the day of the death, not on the day of the Kvura. The Ramah in Ilchas Avelos, Simon Shin Sadi Aleph, writes that it is usur to go to a chasana to participate in a wedding on the night of a yard site. So if a person has yard site, obviously we know a Jewish halachic day goes from night until day, from night until the next night. So the night of the yard site, the Ramah says, a person who is observing yard site for a parent should not be participating in a simcha, should not be participating in a wedding. And the Ramah seems to just say that very clearly, and he quotes it from the Halachos HaMenhagim, from the Marival, and that's the assumption of the Ramah. And the Levush pounces on him and he says, Lo ra'isi na'angim kein. I've never seen anybody who has such a practice not to go to a wedding on a yard site. Why would you refrain from going to a wedding on a yard site? After all, says the Levush, a yard site has nothing to do with Avelus. Your Avelus is over already. Again, we're not talking about the first year. We're talking about subsequent years. Your Avelus is already over, so why wouldn't you go and participate in a simcha and a wedding on the night of the yard site? What does the yard site have anything to do with Avelus? And the Shach discusses the issue back and forth, and he says, in my community, I know they have the practice to refrain from going to a chasana on the day of a yard site. In other communities, they seem not to. He gets into the discussion, lo ra'inu en araya, if a community doesn't have a practice, should we take that as a indication in either direction? A very unclear issue here about whether or not we should have this practice, and obviously this is a matter of minhag by each family or by each community to figure out whether or not you have this practice of refraining from participating in simchas on the night or the day of a yard site of a parent. The Gemara has a Maseches Shavuos, that there seemed to be a practice in the days of the Gemara that on the day of a yard site, people would refrain from eating meat. That's what the Gemara seems to say. And the Rishonim, they're explaining, the Rush and other Rishonim say that the reason why people used to do that is because, after all, it's a day of tzar, it's a day of anguish, it's a day when we're sad, it's a day when we're reflecting, it's a day when we're thinking a lot about the past. And therefore, says the Rishonim, that's why they had a practice in the days of the Gemara that you shouldn't overindulge on a day of a yard site, it's just inappropriate. The Maharil took that a giant step forward and he said, the same way the Gemara says they had a practice not to eat meat on the day of a yard site, so too, says the Maharil, many have the practice nowadays not to eat at all, to fast the entire day of the yard site. So again, that's obviously a giant step forward from what the Gemara said, but that's what the Maharil says, that's where it comes from, and this is quoted in the Ramah. And the Ramah seems to say that it's a minig midas chasidus, it seems to be a very nice practice to do, to fast on the day of the observance of a yard site. The Chassam Sofer says, no, it's not just a minig, it's not just a midas chasidus, it's an absolute halacha, it's a din, everybody must do it, it's absolutely something that you have to do, it's not something they have a choice in doing. We don't generally assume that way. I know my father told me that when his mother passed away, she died on Yud Aleph Av. So it was 2 days after Tisha B'Av. So he said the first couple of years, the first year or two, I think he said, he fasted on the yard site because he thought that's what you're supposed to do. That's what the Ramah says. Then the next year was a Tisha B'Av Shenidche. So it turned out that Tisha B'Av fell out on Yud Av, and then the yard site was going to be observed on Yud Aleph Av. So then he would have to fast 2 days in a row. So he was going to go and ask his father, what am I supposed to do on a year like this? Do I need a Hataras Nedarim? I can't fast 2 days in a row. So he went to his father and he asked him, I've been fasting for the yard site for your wife, my mother, for the last year or two. And now it turns out that it's a Tisha B'Av Shenidcha, and now I'm not able to fast because I can't fast 2 days in a row. So my grandfather said, why'd you fast the first 2 years? Our family doesn't have that minig at all. So my father told me already now, When it comes a time, tell all the family members, you don't have to fast for me, don't stop what you're doing, observe the yard site, say Kaddish, but don't fast. So that's what our family's practice is. But again, it depends on what the particular minhag is. But where does that come from, to fast on the day of a yard site? So the Levush writes that the reason why we do this is twofold. Number one, he says, because perhaps on the day of a yard site, it's a Yom Mesukan, it's Roa Mazle, it's a day when we have a bad mazel. After all, we know that 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, on this very day in our family, we suffered a big loss. And therefore, we assume on that calendaric date, it's some sort of bad mazel for the family. So you should fast to make sure that the mazel doesn't continue to be bad. You should have good mazel on this day. So that's the reason number one that the Levush gives. Reason number two he gives is because on the day of the yard site is the opportunity for the niftar to have aliyas haneshama. And therefore, he says, the more mitzvahs, the more tikkun we could do down here, the more ilei haneshama the Nifter will get up there. It's somewhat of a Yom HaDin for the Nifter, so therefore we fast on behalf of the Yom HaDin that's taking place for the Nifter in Shamayim. That's what we assume. It is important to mention what the Shulchan Aruch writes in Aruch Chaim. It's not in Hilchos Avelos. The Shulchan Aruch writes with regard to Hilchos Tainus, he says, Talmud Chacham, Eino Rashai Leishe V'Tainus. When you have a Talmud Chacham who's spending his days learning or teaching Torah, Eino Rashai Leishe V'Tainus. That person should not be engaged in fasting. Because if you're going to be fasting, you're not going to have the strength to do what you're supposed to be doing, to learn or to teach like you're supposed to. Unless we're talking about, obviously, a public fast day where everybody's doing it, so then everybody's weak. But if it's a day like yours, an elective fast day, like yours of a yahrzeit or yours of some special occasion, so in a case like that, he says, a Talmud Chacham should refrain from fasting. And the Shulchan Aruch adds as well, Malamdei tinokos dinam ki talmidei chachamim. When you have people who are engaged in teaching children, that's a very important avodas hakodesh, and therefore the Shulchan Aruch writes, they have a status of talmidei chachamim, and they too are not allowed to take upon themselves elective fast days, because then they're going to be weaker, they're not going to be able to teach the students as they should. And that's what the Magen Avraham says, any person nowadays who learns Torah, spends their day learning Torah, should also not take upon themselves public fast days, because we assume, private fast days, because we assume that that will take away from what they are supposed to be involved in, from their limud haTorah and from their teaching of Torah. It's similar to what they quote in the name of the Arizal, that although a person who's involved in terrible averus and you want to do tshuva for it, and it's a wonderful thing to accept upon yourself to fast Monday and Thursday or Bahav or Erev Shchodesh or whatever it might be, he says you have to put it into context. Says the Arizal, if you're a person who's going to take away from your avodas HaKodesh by doing that, if you're supposed to be involved in doing good things, and because of this you're not going to have the strength to do it, so then, says the Arizal, it's not a good idea to take that upon yourself. But it is worthy of making note that although there is a practice, and many communities have this practice, that a child fasts on the day of a yahrzeit of a parent, it's important to note that if you're going to do that, the fast only has meaning if you are mekabel the fast the day before by mincha. So the story with that goes as follows. The Gemara writes in Maseches Tainus, Daf Yud Beis, when you have a public fast day, let's say Tisha B'Av or Shiva Asar B'Tammuz or any of the public fast days, we don't have to accept it upon ourselves the day before. The shul made an announcement, this week is going to be Tisha B'Av. It's a public fast day that's already fixed into the calendar. No individual person has to take the fast day upon themselves. It's a fast day, we know that. However, when I take upon myself a private fast day, that only has meaning, that only has relevance if beforehand I plan for it. If I designate the day as a fast day in advance and I say, this is what I plan to do tomorrow. So says the Gemara, Kol Tainus Shelo Kibel Alav Mibod Yom. Anytime you have a private fast day, an elective fast day, you say, I want to do tshuva for an avera that I did. Very nice thing to do. But you can't just wake up one morning and say, okay, today I'm not going to eat. Says the Gemara, you have to accept it from the day before and say, I want to accept tomorrow as a fast day. Says the Gemara, you have to do that by being mekabelit by mincha. What does it mean by mincha? So there's a machlokas in the Gemara. Does it mean in the afternoon of the day before? Or does it mean, no, actually in mincha. When you daven mincha, you have to make sure that you make an insertion that says, tomorrow is going to be a private elective fast day that I take upon myself for this and this reason, for the yahrzeit, for the tshuva, for whatever you might want to do, the fast day. So the Torah writes that this Gemara has two opinions. Do you accept it upon yourself during the afternoon the day before? Or do you accept it upon yourself during davening mincha? So it's not clear how do we paskin, and machlok is the Rambam and the Rif, and the Ravid, it's not clear what the halacha is, but the Shulchan Aruch assumes that the halacha is you're supposed to accept it upon yourself during the Tfilas HaMincha. During Mincha, one is supposed to say privately in whatever lashon they want that tomorrow I accept upon myself a private elective fast day, and unless you do that, the fast day really has no relevance, no meaning at all. So there are Amarites over there that, in his opinion, he feels the proper thing to do is to say it by Elokai Netzar. Before you take three steps back, that's the right place to make the insertion. No need to make any interruption in the middle of the Shemona Esrei proper. It's best to do it at the end. B'shas Adchak, the Magen Avraham writes, if you forgot all about it by Mincha, and now you're home and you realize, I really want to fast tomorrow, it's a yahrzeit. So B'shas Adchak, the Magen Avraham writes, you can accept it, Kol Zman, it's still daytime. Kol Zman, it's still afternoon of the day before. But once it already turns night, once it's already the next day, then the Achronim assume it doesn't make sense to accept upon yourself a fast day, it's too late. And this is something to keep in mind for those who want to observe that minig of fasting on a yahrzeit. The only way to do that is if you're mekabel the tainus the day before. If you don't do that, the tainus really doesn't have much relevance. It came up recently because I remember a few months ago, Rav Asher Weiss was by us for a while, and he had a family member who was not well. So on the day that the family member was having the surgery, I was with him in the hospital, and I came and I brought a coffee and a breakfast and everything, and he said, no, we're fasting. So I said, okay. So he said he thought that that made sense, that his children and himself should fast on the day that the family was going through this very dangerous surgery by one of the family members. So he said, we were all mekabel yesterday. Otherwise, it wouldn't make sense just to wake up 6 o'clock in the morning and say, oh, today we're going to fast. So they all had to fast the day before. So recently, there was someone in the shul who also had a very serious procedure done by a close family member. And they called me the night before, like 12:30 at night, to ask, what should I do? So I said, I'm not sure exactly what you should do. I would have said that you should fast, but now it's already 12:30 at night, and the procedure is tomorrow morning, 7:30 in the morning. So to just wake up in the morning and fast, not sure how much relevance that has. I'm not sure really what it does. The Gemara says if you weren't mekabel the private fast day beforehand, it really doesn't have so much significance. So this is something to keep in mind. If you want to take upon yourself a private fast day for any particular reason, it has to be done the day before. One final comment to make about a yahrzeit is that obviously the highlight of the yahrzeit, the greatest chus we can have, is when we recite a kaddish on behalf of the person who is a nifter. And the reason why that's a tremendous chus is because the Gemara says if you say Yehei Shmei Rabbah or others say Yehei Shmei Rabbah, that is going to be something that is almost unparalleled, something that is not many mitzvahs you can do that are very similar to being Mekadesh Shem Shamayim in this world. But the Gemara warns us clearly in Megillah that the only way you can say a Dvarim Shebekdusha, like Kaddish, like Kedusha or Baruch Hu, is if you have a minion. So sometimes people mistakenly go to a Beis HaKvaros on the day of a yahrzeit, and they visit the kever and they recite a Kaddish even though they're there just with the immediate family members and there is no minion. So one has to be careful to keep in mind that the only way you have a right to recite a Kaddish is if you are going to make sure that you have a proper minion there to answer. And even when you come to shul and you recite the Kaddish, the only way Kaddish can be recited is if you're going to say it loud enough that 10 people can actually hear you. But sometimes you see people sit and say Kaddish very quietly, very softly, they're ashamed, they're embarrassed, whatever it might be, they're tsanua maybe. So in a case like that, it's very questionable whether or not Kaddish should be recited. The only way Kaddish can be said is if it's said like a Dvarim Shebekdusha, which includes 10 people answering to the Kaddish that's being said. Yeah.